Anglicanism has a unique place in this Reformation story, because I think, as your fellow historian Dermot McCulloch pointed out in his book, Christianity, the First 3,000 Years, Anglicanism was neither a Catholic fish nor Protestant fowl. So what was it? And what has it become? Because it was contemporaneous, in a sense, with Martin Luther.
Yes, well, the English Reformation, which is where Anglicanism derives from, took a very long time to sort out just what sort of Protestantism was it going to be. And it turned out by the middle of the 17th century, after the English Civil Wars, to be a very odd form of Protestantism indeed, because it had within it not just the usual Protestant emphasis on justification by faith alone and other dimensions like the importance of the Bible as the only authoritative form for doctrine, had some odd Catholic remnants as well, such as cathedrals and bishops and ordination and sacramental emphasis as well. So what began to happen is that gradually, by the 17th century, the people in the Church of England began to quite value this odd form of Protestantism, and then, of course, over the next few centuries to work out, well, what were they? Were they Catholic or were they Protestant? And eventually, most Anglicans settled on a rather odd idea that they could be both, which, of course, nobody else in Western Europe thought was a good idea at all. You either were one or the other.
But this was Queen Elizabeth I's settlement, wasn't it? That there were certain things she liked, I think, as did her father Henry VIII, about the old Catholicism, part of its ritual, and indeed its beauty.
Yes, indeed. Well, we talk about the Elizabethan settlement, but nobody else in England at the time, and we're talking about 1558 when she came to the throne, nobody else in England thought it was settled at all, but the Queen did. So if the Queen did, she wasn't going to have a bar of anybody moving it beyond what had happened in 1558. And it's probably true that if she had had her way, she would have had some more ritual and certainly much more music, which she loved, in the church. And while she couldn't enforce that throughout the Church of England, she could enforce it in certain areas, such as her own Chapel Royal, and that then became a model for other more conservative elements within the Church of England to say, well, look, if it's good enough for Her Majesty, why don't we try this as well?
Rowan, why did Anglicanism, given that it ultimately became a universal church, even though it began as the Church of England, never truly rival, though, the Catholic Church in its universalism?
Oh, I think to call it a universal church is probably stretching the idea a wee bit far.
Well, except though, if I go to Barbados, I can go to an Anglican church, to South Africa, to pretty much any continent in the world, I'll find some following of traditional Anglicanism.
That's very true. It is a global church, but its globalism is largely a consequence of the British Empire. So most of those, all of those places you've quoted, for example, have been at one stage or another British colonies. Now, Anglicanism did go beyond the British Empire in parts of China and Asia, for example, but largely its globalism came about through the British Empire's expansion. And it's rather one of the rather odd things that a church that was set up to be purely the church of the nation, a nation, the English, has ended up a global church for lots of other different cultures and languages. And in many ways, the church still hasn't got its act together about being a global church. In many ways, it acts as though it's still very much a national church and each part of it can just do what it wants. And that's one of the issues, I think, for global Anglicanism today, to begin to operate as a global community rather than just various national churches.